when I was a kid, I always confused John Landis and Ivan Reitman.
Yes, I could totally understand that.
Because they're similar guys in a similar time doing similar movies.
Right.
All
And not
right.
only that, but like they both have sons that have gone on to like make films and stuff too.
Yes. What do you call it? Jason Reitman is in the movie we're talking about today.
Yes, sir. It's a memorable part.
Yeah. Welcome to Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. This is our New Year's special. Doing something different from the last couple of years. What we've been doing the last couple of years has been doing Twilight Zone episodes, but I wanted to switch it up this year and talk about one of my favorite New Year's movies. I'm joined today by my good friend and yours, Mr. Peter Marsh.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. You all know Peter from his YouTube channels slash podcasts, Comic Books Transformed and The LasserCast, where he talks about respectively horror cinema, horror TV, and comic books adapted into other media. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. Was it a good 2023 for you?
Yes. The long pause is always an indication of truth. No, it was. But like we're old now. So
Yes.
like when I was younger, I'd be like, oh, this year I hooked up with this pretty girl and I got a new job or whatever. Now I'm like, oh yeah, I read 50 books and I watched this whole series and
Yep.
I probably gained 10 pounds.
Yeah. I did the same thing. I did like my rundown. I was like, wow, this is an eventful year. I went on a couple of trips and I mean my kid was in like a Shakespeare play, so I was very proud of her. She was
What
like in the
play?
Shakespeare camp. She was in The Winter's Tale, which is not like Shakespeare one of Shakespeare's most known
Yeah,
plays.
I've heard the name, but I'm not that familiar with Winter's Tale.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Like she actually went to a camp that was sponsored by the local college, the University of Texas, and it was like her and 10 kids, and they just put on this play, and it was kids from like 12 years old to 18 years old, and they were the people in the play.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
Are
so
your
that's what happens when you get old. Like you kind of like your event is your kids' event.
Do you think that your kids are sort of shaping up to be similar to you in a way? Like, are they nerdy? Are they into nerdy things? Do you see them being like over fixated on like the mythology of things?
I kind of maybe try to force them to be, with my one daughter Clementine, who's seven, like right now we're watching Avatar: The Last Airbender. I watched it with
Awesome.
Pepper. And it's funny because I was really excited to watch Star Wars with Clem. She's seven, and I just put up my Star Wars Christmas tree, but then she had a nightmare about Chewbacca, so we can't watch Star Wars right now.
Oh, I
You
mean, I
get
get it.
it?
I get
He's like
it.
the nicest creature.
Yeah, but in that first movie, he's played like a heavy. He's kind of like the muscle. It's a while before he's like America's sweetheart. Very cool. That's awesome.
So I'm actually like super honored to be on for this particular episode because I'm kind of surprised you've never covered Ghostbusters 2 on your channel.
Yeah, years ago, I did an episode that we just called Ghostbusters, where we kind of talked about like everything up to that point. We talked about the original part two, 2016, and the real Ghostbusters. And the toys, and we can talk about all those things today too. But today we have a focus on Ghostbusters 2, which I was thinking about this yesterday. A lot of times people ask me what's the movie I've seen the most. I don't know if you get that question.
Yes.
And I always go, oh, it's got to be either Ghostbusters or Star Wars. And I'm not exactly sure. I mean, A New Hope. But yesterday I was like, it might actually be Ghostbusters 2. I might have seen Ghostbusters 2 more than any other. And as I say that, I see my master's degree in cinema studies on the wall burst into flames more than any other film. Because I don't know if you remember, we're the same age, basically. There was a time where Comedy Central would play Ghostbusters 2 like every day, it felt like. And I watched it on Comedy Central constantly.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't just on there. I think it was on HBO a lot, too.
Yeah.
That's happened with me where it's like you see the sequels more. Like another thing that we're going to discuss in another recording is Gremlins 2. And I've absolutely seen Gremlins 2 way more than I've seen Gremlins. And also, for me, it's funny because you're saying that you saw Star Wars the most. In the original trilogy, that's the one that you've seen the most out of those three?
Oh, gosh. That's an interesting question.
Because I know for me, I've definitely seen... Go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's all right. It changes. If we interrupt each other, it's because we do this through Zoom and there's always a little bit of a lag. It changes through eras. Like, embarrassingly, there was a time when I was like 15 where I was like, I watched Return of the Jedi a lot. And I thought Return of the Jedi was the greatest movie ever, which it isn't. It's a good movie. It's got an incredible opening act and it's got a really good, like, last act. And then in the middle, there's a lot of trying to get through doors. but then, like, you know, like, I do believe that the best Star Wars movie is Empire. So, like, if I were to just pop one in now, I would probably want to watch Empire. But I don't know. I feel like I've seen A New Hope just a lot. There's something so pure and uncomplicated about A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, go ahead.
Of the original Star Wars trilogy, which one do you think you've seen the most of?
Oh, it's definitely Return of the Jedi. I just used to like pop in the VHS and just watch it. And I always used to watch like the Jabba stuff. Then I'd kind of skip through the middle, like you just said, and then just watch Vader and Luke in the final battle or whatever. Yeah. And so, you know, somebody once made a point that like, you know, Jedi might not be the best of the original trilogy. It might be the least, but it has some of the highest moments. You know, it has like Luke and Vader fighting for the last time and, you know, the Empire being destroyed. So, you know, I always liked it as a kid. But yeah, Empire is my favorite too.
Wait, I'm remembering, didn't you have a fun story where you met Mark Hamill and you told him that Return of the Jedi was your favorite?
I still cringe. You know, there's those moments that you think about like 30 years later and you're like, ugh, like you shudder. I waited online at the Menlo Park Mall like for hours just talking to other Star Wars fans, and I was like a teenager. He was signing a comic called The Black Pearl, which is for like Dark Horse, and it was actually kind of perverted, had like a lot of nudity and stuff in it, and I got a copy of it for him to sign, and when I walked up to him, I went, "Hey, Luke," like just like an asshole, and then I was like, "I just watched Return of the Jedi, my favorite Star Wars film," and it's like I found out that he didn't like Return of the Jedi, and it was just awkward as hell.
But you know what? He probably gets that exact conversation 5 times a day still.
Right.
He doesn't remember.
Well, now he's got people saying to him, "You didn't like The Last Jedi? Why not?" You
know? I know, I'm sure. Yeah, that's what I would say to him if I fucking saw him. I'd be like, "That was the greatest performance of your life. Shut up." Vin Forte, and it's this is the Ghostbusters 2 episode. We're already talking about Star Wars. Vin Forte from Pop Culture Man Children, he was in an elevator. He met David Lynch, and he was like, "Oh, you know what I'm going to say to David Lynch? I'm going to say something like really like inside baseball that like will show that I really know a lot about him." So he said something like, "Oh, you know, it would have been great if you had actually made Return of the Jedi." And David Lynch was like, "Yeah, okay." And just completely just was like uninterested in the conversation. So,
oh my God, I am incredibly of Vin Forte, man. Like, I would love to meet David Lynch. Sometimes I fantasize, like, is it possible for me to meet him before he dies? How can I make that work?
And meditation. That's the way. Yes. That's the way. And if you talk to him about meditation, he'll talk. He won't. I imagine he would not want to talk about movies, especially his. But if you talk to him about like TM, he'd probably be way into it.
Right. Believe me, I signed up for it at one point. Like, I get the newsletter. It's just that you have to spend like thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's a little bit like, well, you know, it's good, but it's a little bit like Scientology that way. It's expensive.
Right.
All right, but this is the Ghostbusters 2 episode. Ghostbusters 2 comes out in 1989, directed by Ivan Reitman, written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. Composer is Randy Edelman. The original composer for part one was Elmer Bernstein, who does an incredible score. The score is reused. The themes are reused in Ghostbusters Afterlife. I'm actually partial to the score from Ghostbusters 2. I like it. And in fact, this is very embarrassing. I find often in my life I hum it. I'm just like humming the Ghostbusters 2 score. There's a great book that if you're interested in Ghostbusters, it's totally worth reading. What's it called? A convenient para. I've got to look up the name because it's an interesting name.
Sure.
Okay, it's called A Convenient Parallel Dimension: How Ghostbusters Slimed Us Forever. It's a
Huh.
really interesting book about the making of all the Ghostbusters. I will say that it focuses on the more it's kind of trashy. Like it focuses on negative things, and I'm not saying that it lies. I'm sure a lot of what it says is true, but a lot of it is like hearsay. Like he'll write in the book like these crew members said Ivan Reitman is an asshole to work with, and it's like okay, but like how do you prove that or disprove that? But yes, last night I reread the chapter in Ghostbusters 2, and Elaine May, the actress and comedian, she was in a comedy troupe with the director Mike Nichols. She actually had a 6-hour meeting with Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd, where she kind of like helped them focus on the script. Like she just read the script and she asked them a ton of questions, like, well, what about this? If this could happen, why not this? Why doesn't this happen? How is the slime connected to Vigo? Blah, blah, blah. And they said that she didn't really rewrite anything, but their conversation with her really helped them refocus the final draft of the script.
Okay. That's really interesting. It's funny because you think of Dan Aykroyd as like a madman, right? With his Crystal Skull vodka.
Yes.
And he wrote Ghostbusters 1 and this, like you said, with Harold Ramis. But like whenever you hear the original pitches for Ghostbusters and for this,
Yes.
they always sound so fucking bonkers and
Yes.
crazy,
Well,
right?
yeah, he is. Dan Aykroyd's a very interesting person. He's brilliant. He's on the autism spectrum. And the way I think of it, like, is he is like a font of creativity. Like he like the original script to the Blues Brothers was like 700 pages or something insane like that. Like he just has ideas. Like his original script for Ghostbusters before he even worked on it with Harold Ramis was like they went to Scotland and there was like they there was a they wanted to help like just create their they spend 3 days inside a giant tube under the ground. Like it's just pure creativity. And then Harold Ramis has to come in and like shape it and be like, okay, well, let's get like back to reality. Where are the characters? Where are the jokes? So it's really fascinating. And I don't know about you, like I'm always really fascinated by the history of different like scripts and how they develop. Like there was an early for a long time, Sigourney Weaver wasn't going to be in Ghostbusters 2 because she was having a big dispute with the studio Columbia because they had basically stiffed her on money that they owed her. Everybody in the original movie had back end percentages, and when it came to her, they did that weird Hollywood math where they went, ah, the movie didn't make any money, which is just crazy. And she was like, well, I want you to, she was like, I want you to do an audit or I'll sue you. And then eventually, so they were like, okay, she's not going to be in the movie. And they wrote some other character to like take the place of her. And then eventually, like, they gave her the money because they didn't want her to sue them. And she was in Ghostbusters 2. But I'm just fascinated by like different script versions.
Well, if we're talking about Dana Barrett, for example, she was originally supposed to have been with Venkman, and
Yeah.
Oscar was supposed to be their kid, but then what's his face? Bill Murray thought that that would make too much of a focus on Venkman and not the Ghostbusters as a team, and also like Ivan, not Ivan Reitman, Harold Ramis wanted to focus on the idea of like the Ghostbusters sort of like not being heroes anymore, that the kind of like losing
Yeah.
their fame and stuff, and which you see a lot of in the beginning of this movie. It's funny too, because going back to that Dan Aykroyd point, apparently Oscar and the whole storyline with him got taken from a script that Dan Aykroyd wrote about like a baby that had like supernatural powers. Did you read that?
No, I've never heard that.
I read it and it, like, and this is all off of Wikipedia, so who knows how reliable this is, but it was saying that he wrote a script where a baby had like supernatural powers and like special agility that was beyond its age. So could you imagine like in the early 80s, a movie about a baby that could like move real quickly and terrorize people.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's just it's weird, like the hodgepodge of stuff they come up with to make these movies. And yet Ghostbusters 2, in a lot of ways, this is the main criticism that people give it, is that essentially it's just a copy of the original. You're just like changing the details.
Yes, it's a different story, quote unquote story, but the narrative beats are the same. Like, right. Peter McNichol's character Janusz is just the same point of as Lewis Tully, played by Rick Moranis. It's Dana. The thing is focused on Dana. They go into business again. There's a montage of them being successful in business. It's really like beat for beat the same thing, which is always the worst kind of sequel, I think.
Right.
But you know, and people. I'm sorry.
No, there's a giant creature that walks through the city at the end of the movie.
Okay, so, and we can bounce all around because that's just the way me and Peter think and talk. And I'm going to assume that, like, you guys have, everyone listening has seen Ghostbusters 2. So I don't feel any obligation to, like, summarize the film to you. Like, we're talking about Ghostbusters 2. So since you brought that up, I want to say, if I had to say, like, what's the worst thing in this movie? What's the thing that does not work? It's the Statue of Liberty. And even they have said, you know, it's the only cynical thing we put in the movie. It's the only time we thought, not that it's cynical, but it's the only time we cynically thought, well, the first movie ended with a giant thing. We need a giant thing in this. But, you know, like, there's always a reality to every narrative. And those realities can bend in ways, but then, like, there'll be these breaking points. Somehow, in the silly world of Ghostbusters, where, like, you know, ghosts can drive buses, like, the idea of the Statue of Liberty coming to life and walking through the city is the breaking point. It's too much. It goes from fun to silly. It doesn't make any sense, because the idea is they're supposed to be inspiring people. And would you be inspired if you saw the Empire State Building walking down the street?
I think I would shit my pants instantly. Yeah. I think that's really terrifying. Yeah. And I mean, like, the Statue of Liberty steps on a cop car at one point, and it's funny, like, you just be worried about it stepping on someone. It's like not Stay Puft the Marshmallow Man, which is huge, but he's all doughy and stuff. This is this big metal structure just walking by.
Right, and it doesn't look metal. It's like bending, and the fabric is moving, so the slime made it no longer metal.
Yeah.
Also, it's on, I mean, this is getting, like, really particular, but, like, Statue of Liberty is on a pedestal, so she would have to jump off of that, and then also, like, walk through the water. It's the dumbest thing in this movie, and it's just super dumb. It's just dumb.
Yeah, I agree. If you're asking me what is the thing that I think breaks the movie, or, like, I dislike the most, I actually dislike that their logo gets changed to where the ghost is holding up two fingers.
I agree. Oh yeah, I agree. It makes no fucking sense.
Right. I get that, like, if for the movie it's Ghostbusters 2 and it's doing that, right? Yeah. But, like, why as a business would the ghost be doing this, you know?
Right, right. But this is our second chance at being Ghostbusters.
Right. But as far as the Statue of Liberty goes, I remember that when they were filming this, it was like a really big deal and they were looking for a lot of extras. And so that whole sequence at the end where they're around the art museum, they had a whole bunch of New Yorkers just there. Yeah. And my dad was there. Like, he really? Saw Ecto. Yeah. Yeah. He saw Ecto. I think it was Ecto 2, right? Because it's all Ghostbusters.
Ecto 1A.
Oh, Ecto 1A. Okay. Okay. So he saw that. And, like, you know, I think he was, like, in the crowd and stuff at one point.
Can you see him in the movie?
Yeah, my dad was there. He was the one that's saying crazy things to other people in the background. No. Like, I don't think you see him at all. But, like, to me as a kid, because this came out in 89, so I was, like, 7 years old. And just the idea of my dad going to where they're filming the next Ghostbusters movie, that just blew my mind.
Wow, yeah. Let's talk about our personal histories with it. So it came out in 89. I was born in 83. So I was like a real little kid. I saw it in the theater. I went with my dad and my older brother.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I remember of the experience, though, is that when the bathtub comes alive in that scene. I like got really scared and I went to run out of the theater and my dad grabbed my shirt and he was like sat me down. I was like so freaking scared. But like yeah, that was the first Ghostbuster movie that I saw in a theater but I was a big fan of the real Ghostbusters. Did you
And
see
I'm,
it in the theater?
yes, I did. And my parents, my mom had this really bad habit of like covering my eyes if she thought that it'd be kind of like a scary part, or if we were watching a movie that had like sex or like extreme violence, she'd cover my eyes. And I bet you she covered my eyes for a couple of parts of this movie. I remember being really scared because you talk about the tub. The tub is scary. It kind of looks like a sandworm from Dune or something when it comes out to get Oscar. But the thing that always stood out to me, the thing that always scared me, was when Janosch goes to check up on Dana when there's the blackout, and he like says something creepy to her, and then he goes and leaves, and then he just his eyes glow and he's wall. That was really that's nightmare fuel right there.
I agree, by the way. There's also the scene where he's dressed like Mary Poppins, which is very, very disturbing.
Yes.
I don't even know why he does that. I guess because there's a blackout, but it's just weird. Like, there's a lot of weird stuff with him.
I want to get to Janosch, but you just asked me about the real Ghostbusters, and I had this thought before, and I thought it was so profound. Probably like 8,000 people have thought this before, but when you talk about all the stuff that we loved when we were kids, right? Like for me, it's like Transformers, He-Man, Ninja Turtles, right? And you and I have like covered a lot of these on our both of our channels. Transformers, He-Man, Ninja Turtles. Ninja Turtles started out as a comic, but otherwise everything else starts as toys, where they have a tie-in cartoon, and then it becomes eventually a live-action movie, right? Often towards like the end of its fame, right? But Ghostbusters is interesting because it's a live-action movie first, then it becomes a cartoon and toys.
And in some ways, I always felt like that gives it more integrity, because it's a work of art first. How do you feel about there's obvious changes in this movie that they make to accommodate children that they think are going to see it? And I even read that Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis and Ivan Reitman were all aware of it. The only reason Slimer's in the movie at all is because of the cartoon. And there was actually more of there was a whole subplot with Slimer where he wanted to fight Viggo and like I think he talked and stuff.
Oh my
And
God.
they screened the movie. They screened like the dailies, and Bill Murray is there, and he's like, "I thought the movie was called Ghostbusters, not fucking Slimer."
Oh
So
man.
they were like, "Okay, well he's not happy," so they cut out a lot of Slimer.
Good.
I mean, look, so obvious ones are they're not smoking cigarettes like they were in the first movie. Lot less cursing. There's some cursing, but a lot less. And to me, the biggest like changes, I feel like they changed both the design and the character of Janine to match her cartoon version.
That is a really, really good point. And she's like really horny in this too. That has nothing to do with kids. But yeah, it's funny because there still are a bunch of like, entendre jokes and stuff where there's like sexual jokes. And there's this weird thing with her and Lewis like getting it on in Dana's apartment. I remember like as a little kid thinking that was weird. But yes, that's a really great point that she kind of matches the cartoon. I mean, there's also like the cynical idea of, well, they introduced these like slime packs as like their blasters now, and two of them have the slime packs and two of them have the proton packs. So it's just like more
And
toys,
I had the
right?
slime pack toy.
It was a super exciting thing. Like for some reason, our generation, we were really into fucking slime, like with the ooze and the turtles and the slime from the Ghostbusters, And I think
But you
like
know,
He-Man had good.
there's a really great, and I didn't notice this until I was older. There's a great sort of meta reference to that, and it's when Bobby Brown, who's on the soundtrack, has a cameo in the movie as a doorman, and he meets him and he goes, "Hey, can I have one of those proton packs? My little brother really wants one." And then Egon says, "The proton pack is not a toy," which is clearly a meta reference to the fact that it is a fucking toy and that we all had them.
Yeah,
So
my
it's,
cousins
yeah.
absolutely had them. I was always like the grub cousin that just didn't have any money, and I always like played with my cousin's toys. And they had like Ninja Turtle weapons and masks, and they had Ghostbusters proton packs and stuff.
There's a proton pack behind me right now. The listeners can't see it.
I'm so jealous, man. They had all the toys.
Dress for the job you want.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, you know, it's funny though, because Ghostbusters was so big when I was a kid, when we were both kids, with the cartoon and with the toys. I was just like obsessed with the fucking toys. And then like this movie, it just doesn't feel like it when you watch it. Like it you know, like it feels just like the first movie, but by the point of this movie, there's already like two different paths. There's like the Ghostbusters of the cartoon and the toys, and there's the Ghostbusters of the movie.
Right.
You know?
I remember as a kid feeling like this movie begins with this idea that after the first movie, they got sued by a bunch of people and sort of the whole bill got put on them, which kind of makes no sense because nobody fucking remembers the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. There was no footage of it. But
yeah,
anyway,
yeah,
you know, even as a kid, I remember going like, no, they're not out of business. Like I've seen them 5 days a week. Like they've got plenty of business.
Right.
They've dealt with banshees in Ireland and fucking, you know, like sexy siren rock stars and
the boogeyman,
and fucking Sanheim in the Halloween special. Like,
yeah.
And I always resented that even as like a story thing, because ghosts exist, but they make it in this movie like, the uptick in ghosts is when there's a bigger thing around. Like the uptick in ghosts in part one is because of Gozer, and the uptick in ghosts in this movie is because of the slime, which is related to Viggo, although not that well established as how it's related to Viggo.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's talk about Viggo for a second, right? Viggo is like this really striking looking character. That painting is amazing.
Yeah.
I remember seeing like that painting, someone had it like in their garage or something like that during Halloween this year, and I was like, that's fucking awesome. They had like a full Viggo painting. But Viggo, the actor, he's got this crazy name, Wilhelm von Homburg.
Yeah,
that's Viggo's body, but then his voice is Max von Sydow,
uncredited.
Yes. And it's funny because I distinctly remember when he shows up in the movie and he's kind of scary for me as a kid.
Yeah.
But I thought his voice was awesome. And I mean, I think that's pretty appropriate because Max von Sydow's voice is awesome.
Yeah,
his line delivery is great. And so he has this like gravitas as this villain. And it's interesting about Ghostbusters because the villains are like cosmically powerful and can do this kind of crazy stuff, but yet they're also kind of like weakened or whatever. Like they can't fully do their thing. That happens in both movies, right? Like they do these crazy over the top things, but they're not able to like unleash their power until the end. And that's really present with him. They talk about how like he lived for like a long time. He was a magician and they killed him like hanging him and stabbing him. It was almost kind of like Rasputin.
Yes.
Like you know how Rasputin wouldn't die. But there's never a thing where it says like he dabbled in using people's emotions to make some kind of, there's nothing like that.
Right. There should be, right? There definitely should be. Because it seems like the slime is what is the engine that's bringing him back, but it's never clear. But again, cynically, you might say, well, we sold a lot of green slime so far. How about pink slime?
Right.
I remember speaking of the Ecto-1A, even though it was the movie, smartly, the real Ghostbusters toy line made toys relating to this movie. They never made a Viggo figure, but they made the Ecto-1A. And I remember my parents being like, not wanting to buy it because it was literally the same toy. It just had different stickers. It had the sticker with the you know, the two sign.
Right.
And purple like slime stickers, and me being like, I want it. And they were like, it's the exact same toy you already have. And eventually I think I won and I got it. But even now it's like, what a cheap fucking thing. Like, couldn't like do some kind of an update. Like it was the exact same toy, even like to the point where like, you know how like they would put indents in the plastic for where the stickers were. You can see like when you put the ghost symbol with the two fingers up, it didn't fit because it still was indented for the original.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh man. That ghost should have just been holding up his middle finger at that point, you know? Yeah. But, You're good thing you're not really a Transformers fan, because your parents would be like, this is the same fucking toy like 8,000 times. How
Oh, is
many
that?
fucking Optimus Primes are there, you know?
Oh, would they recycle shit a lot with
Oh my God. Yes. I mean, first of all, like, I don't want to go down this tangent, but like, there's certain characters that are just recolorings of other characters. Like, there's like Starscream, but then there's like, Thundercracker and Skywarp. They're all the same character. They're just different colors, you know?
Well, the
Yeah.
audience should know that Peter's like biggest fandom is Transformers, which is one that I'm not into.
Right.
It's just like maybe it's because I'm a few like a couple years younger than you. Something about it just went by. Like in my childhood, it's like Ghostbusters, He-Man, Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers, a little bit like Thundercats. But
Oh, yes.
Transformers and G.I. Joe are the two that I have like almost no connection to.
Yeah. That really is a difference in age for us, because like these things, they kind of rose and fell, and just one would just take the other one's place. And so you kind
Literally,
of, yeah, you were kind of around when Transformers was going down and then Ghostbusters was going up, you know? And then eventually Ninja Turtles too, you know? But let's tie it back to the movie. I remember as a kid, Ray and Winston go to this kid's party, and they frame it like they're going to go trap ghosts, because they got their suits on. They say, how big are they? They ask the woman, how big are they? And then they say like they're about this tall or something like that. And you think she's talking about ghosts, but then it's a kid's party. And I remember, like, even as a kid watching that scene and be like, why the fuck are they at a kid's party? Like, these guys, you know what I'm saying? Like, they saved New York City. Right, they should be like in charge of the government or something, right? And so they do this hokey dance, which incorporates the, from the original movie. They're doing this song, they're doing like a little dance, and then they say, who are you gonna call? And the kids are like, He-Man. And in a weird way, that even feels more dated than Ghostbusters.
Right, because He-Man, what I think was popular kind of before-ish Ghostbusters, right? He-Man begins in 83, Ghostbusters comes out in 84.
Right.
Yeah.
And just
But
He-Man never reached those heights of Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters is always cooler and more popular.
right, adults like Ghostbusters.
Right.
Did you do you like that they do that? Some people really hate that they make that the Ghostbusters song exists within the world of the movies. I kind of like that fourth wall breaking thing. But how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of goes back to the thing with the ghost having the two fingers, because it's just sort of like they're aware, like somehow the movie exists in its own world, but then it's also our world too. And and the world knows about Ghostbusters. It's okay. It makes this movie feel unique. And I don't know, I just kind of dig it, you know?
All right, since we're going all around, let's talk about what I think is one of my favorite sequences, which is the courtroom stuff.
Yes, good call.
You've got this great character actor, Harris Yulin, who plays the judge, and he's so great as the judge. He's like, I don't want to hear any bullshit about any ghosts and goblins or spooks and like it's so fun. He's so funny as like an angry guy. And
Yeah.
these movies, and I'm not the first person to say this, these movies actually have a very conservative point of view, both politically and socially. Like it's all about going into business, and business should not be regulated, which is very Republican. But also, the villains in these movies are all people that don't believe in ghosts. So like if you
Yeah.
don't believe in ghosts, you're a fucking asshole and you're an idiot. So but I love the chart. I think it's actually a very clever way to get Lewis back into the story, to have them be the lawyer. I find all of this really funny. Like I laugh a lot during the sequence. I got my law degree in night school. Well, that's okay because we were arrested at night. Like shit
Right.
like that. Like, or when he's on the stand and Peter's like feeding him the lines of what to say.
Right.
It's all really funny stuff.
Yes. What's interesting about Ghostbusters, right, is you have Harold Ramis, Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, and then Ivan Reitman, and they made all these like comedies besides Ghostbusters. That courtroom sequence before the Scolari brothers shows up, that feels the most like their other movies.
Interesting. Yes. Yeah.
Just like the delivery, like first, you know, another great part is when Lewis comes up and he pleads their case, and he's like, you know, they helped me once out because I turned into a dog. Like it's so fun, you know. Even when like the ghosts attack, there's this great part where like the Ghostbusters are like, hey, we're not going to help out because, you know, I thought you didn't believe in ghosts. And then like, well, you got to talk to my lawyer first. And then like Lewis just jumps into frame, like his face pops. He's like, that's me. And it's like, first of all, Rick Moranis is just fucking comedy gold.
Yeah, he's so good.
Yeah. But I mean, that sequence, like it's great because I feel like the Scolari brothers, the way they look, like that's ILM like at its like peak. I love the way they look.
Yes.
They look great. There's this fucking amazing part in that sequence where they pick up the woman who's on the prosecution and they like carry her out of the courtroom and the ghost like goes through the door, but then the door opens up and she goes through it. I just think that's so kind of cool and dynamic for 1989.
It's so well done. I think, I mean, for 1989, I'd say almost all of the effects stand up. There's not a lot that's cringy. Yes. Like a little bit, the sort of like shell of slime over the museum doesn't look great, but a lot of it, anything like practical looks great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Slimer looks really good. Vigo, all the stuff with Vigo looks good.
The River of Slime looks amazing.
Yeah. And every time like the slime kind of becomes something and tries to like grab someone, that's really cool too. Yeah. No, I kind of miss when ILM movies looked like this, you know?
Yes.
Like there's this sort of golden age that's like, you know, from here, like, and I think like the, you know, obviously Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then like Jurassic Park, like all that stuff is so good. And like, so it just matches everything else that's real in the frame.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, you know, things have changed. I don't even know what ILM makes anymore. Like, I guess they made the sequel trilogy and they probably work on the Star Wars shows, but the effects are just so fucking good in this movie.
No, they're incredible. They're incredible. I love the moment where Peter is being cross-examined by the prosecutor. And by the way, I wish the prosecutor wasn't a woman because, of course, he's sexist towards her, which is like the problem with the character of Peter Venkman in our contemporary world. Looking back, he basically just negs women and gaslights women. But I love when when he says, sometimes shit happens, someone's gonna deal with it, and who are you gonna call? Even as a kid, I remember being like,
take that, New York State,
right? He dug a hole. They dug a hole in the middle of a street, unauthorized, and made a massive blackout. And we're rooting for them.
right. No, I mean, it's funny because when you're a kid, you're so kind of focused on like the ghosts and the lore and the jokes and stuff that like there's all this like legal shit going on that like it just kind of doesn't seep into your brain, you know? And like, I think I didn't even understand why they were in the courtroom the first time I saw this.
Yeah,
like I didn't realize that they fucking like shut down New York City because they knocked over a fucking pipe.
Yeah, right.
You know,
I love all that too. By the way, I find when they're like digging in the street and they all like been like, "Oh, Ziggy, where do you think this came from? The sky?"
Right.
Oh, yeah, I don't. Why are you gonna come down here? Right. What does he say? Why do you have to come down here and shake my monkey cage?
Yeah.
Stupid shit.
It's funny because, like, you know, Ghostbusters is such a huge hit nationwide, and everyone knew about Ghostbusters. But I think for us as kids of New York, it has like this significance because you just know that feeling. They have commentary on New York in both of these movies. You know, Bill Murray has a speech in both movies about New York.
Yes,
you know, and the mayor's in it, and like, just there's so many New York references. That's why when they did Ghostbusters Afterlife and it's in this fucking like Midwestern town, I'm like, come on, that's not Ghostbusters.
You're right, it feels so wrong. Yeah.
And so, you know, it's funny because that's kind of that was the impetus of us to do this episode, was that we started to talk about Ghostbusters Afterlife, and then we started to talk about this new one. What the fuck's it called? It's like Ice Age or something. Ghostbusters.
Frozen Empire.
Thank you. Frozen Empire. And we were essentially saying that, like, Frozen Empire feels more like the Ghostbusters cartoon. And it's like they seem more like focused on lore and stuff for these new movies,
yeah,
versus the comedy of the first two.
Right, exactly. I mean, I like Afterlife, but it's a kids movie. It's not a comedy. There might be some funny things in it, but it's not a comedy.
Right.
And I don't know what, you know, from the trailer for Frozen Empire, it doesn't look that like that's much of a comedy either. It
no.
Looks like it wants to be like an adventure movie or whatever. I'm not sure what it is. Will right. I see it? Of course, I'm going to see it.
Right. It's just like, so I've watched a whole bunch of videos that talk about Ghostbusters 1, Ghostbusters 2. The guys on Red Letter Media really love Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
You know, and a term that I hear often, and this also is on another show I like, The Weekly Planet with Mr. Sunday and stuff. On both shows, they always say that Ghostbusters is like lightning in a bottle.
Yes.
The first one. It's just all these different factors, all these different weird things coming together to make this movie that you can't really recreate.
Yeah.
And so this one, it has like the frame of the first one. They just kind of changed the details. Like you said, the story beats. But as you can see, even they can't recreate the first one.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like, I was just thinking about this when I was thinking about The Exorcist Believer.
Oh, no.
There are some, which I didn't hate it, by the way. I thought it was okay. But there are series like Star Wars where, like, it you know, there are good ones and bad ones, but it's a series. But Ghostbusters and The Exorcist and Jaws, there are some series that are, like, they're not really series. There's, like, one incredible one. And then just various attempts at recapturing that lightning in a bottle. Some work and some don't. I happen to like all the Ghostbusters movies. And I'm a big defender of the 2016 one. Because I feel like in some ways that is actually in spiritually like more like the original movie. At least it's a comedy. People don't like it. I'm not sure why. But
because like, it has women in it, right?
Oh, right. That's probably it.
Yeah.
stop trying to make Exorcist movies. Like, there's just the one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they won't. They won't.
Yeah. I think... that's a really great point. And it's funny because I know that you and Vin Forte were talking about Star Trek Generations recently. I think when movies work as a series, you always have to think about that poster that has like scenes from multiple movies on one poster. Huh. Like Star Wars absolutely does it well because you'll have stuff from A New Hope and Empire and Return of the Jedi. And you're like, okay, so that's this planet. That's Return of the Jedi. That's this planet. It's Empire Strikes Back. With other movies, it's essentially, it would be the same poster, right? Like with this, you know what I'm saying? Like with this, it'd be like, oh, it's New York. Okay, well, that's the first Ghostbusters. And then, maybe you would have like Gozer on one side and Viggo on the other side. And that'd be kind of compelling. But it usually when the whole motif and the look changes and there's new characters introduced, like the only new characters that are introduced in this are Viggo and Janosch.
Yes.
You know? Otherwise, it's just pretty much the same people again from the first one. Even some of the ancillary characters are the same people, like the mayor. I think that like you're 1,000% on the money that there's some movies where it's just like they're just kind of trying to do the first one again. And I think that for it to work as a franchise, you need to have like new different components each time.
So maybe Frozen Empire actually might be the start of something good.
I mean, it could. It could just be its own thing. And I think we have to kind of just detach the idea of it being like Ghostbusters. These movies really, what it falls down onto is like two things, right? Ghostbusters 1 and Ghostbusters 2 is essentially the main thing is the characters. Venkman, Egon, Ray, Winston, right?
Yeah.
That's the main appeal of this movie is those comedians together in this environment. Yeah. Then the second thing is like, the cool set piece sequences with weird ghost stuff.
And
I think that Afterlife didn't have cool set pieces and the characters, some of the characters are actually kind of embarrassing, I thought, in Afterlife. But, you know, I you're saying you kind of liked it. I didn't really like it that much. There's one part where Carrie Coons, right? Is it, I don't know if it's Carrie Coon or Carrie Coons, the mom in it.
Yeah.
Like, she is possessed. Like, her costume changes to where she's, like, regular clothes, and all of a sudden she looks like Sigourney Weaver in the first one with the dress and everything. And I just fucking hated that moment so much.
Why?
Because I'm just like, I get that you're doing the exact same fucking story, but you're, like, literally going to change her outfit to match Sigourney Weaver's, you know?
Right.
I just thought it was so stupid. I don't know, you know?
Yeah. No, you have to... I mean, this is like the larger question of Lego sequels is the balance between what's familiar and what's new.
Right.
And how much, what's the formula for it? You know what I mean? Like, who knows? Frozen Empire might be the Last Jedi of Ghostbusters. You know, really, because they might go in a totally different direction to the point where some Ghostbusters fans hate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean, like I mean, that's the thing. Like, I love The Force Awakens, but it's like a beat for beat kind of remake of A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and someone else, one reviewer said, like, it's like a best of Star Wars. Right? Like,
yeah.
So, like, right.
I think that the key thing with any sequel, but especially these legacy sequels, is the thing that you have to be consistent about, the thing that you have to focus on, is just the characters. Like, the characters are going to act a certain way, and that's why people love these franchises, because of the characters. You don't have to try to, like, awkwardly set up things so that they repeat story beats from a previous movie.
Right.
You just have to give the characters the opportunity to be those characters. Like, give Luke the chance to be Luke, you know, give Venkman the chance to be Venkman. Yeah. Right. But it's like, you don't have to, like, fucking recreate the factors so that it's like, well, now this person has to be possessed and Gozer has to come back over here.
Exactly.
Like, you don't have to do that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you say that, because you were talking about how in one of the early scripts of Ghostbusters 2, Peter and Dana were married and Oscar was their child. But they said, you know what? Peter, he's the most funny when he's hitting on women. So if he's married to her, he can't be hitting on her, or we have him hitting on another woman and being unfaithful to his wife, and the audience wouldn't like that. So they really broke them up only so they could have him try to court her again.
Right.
Courting her is what, which now is like the most cringy stuff in our post Me Too world, but courting her is the stuff they felt like was the most funny.
Yeah, well, it's just this idea of they think, and this happens more often than not, that they think that, oh, they just want to hear the same story again. But, like, we live, you know, like, we could just put on the fucking movie and watch the story again. What we want is a continuation of the story and seeing the characters in new scenarios and encountering new things. But they stay consistent, but they're introduced to new things. That's why Empire Strikes Back is so fucking great, because it's not A New Hope again.
Right.
It's this totally different thing. The structure is different. What happens is different.
But do you think that that is just, when you say we want, do you think that's just viewers like you and I? Because think about The Last Jedi. Like, people who love the Force Awakens, you tend to be the ones that hate The Last Jedi. And it's like, well, what did they want?
Yeah. Well, I think that movies are manipulative in general when it comes to, like, music, and just, like, they'll play certain music to get a reaction out of the audience. And especially, you know, Ghostbusters is a great example, and of course Star Wars is the perfect example where it's like, oh, it's the Force theme, I know what to feel here.
Right.
And I think people want to have those feelings, and I think for the majority of the audience, not people like you and I, as long as they feel fulfilled with that kind of thing, like, oh, it is the Force theme, and someone's going to wield a lightsaber. Oh, I'm supposed to be excited. Oh, I remember this, right? It doesn't matter if it's like, oh, that's the same fucking thing that happened in three other movies. Like, who, they don't care.
Right.
But it's all in the delivery. Like, because I like The Last Jedi a lot too, but I still have problems with it as well. You know, I don't think anything's perfect in the sequel trilogy. There's nothing that, like,
stands. No, not at all.
And so that's why, like, Empire is a great example, because, like, it has some of the same themes from A New Hope, but then it has, like, Darth Vader's theme. It has like this whole new thing.
Right.
And I think that just in general, audiences just want to have that kind of same feeling. But I think for more like people like you and I who like are into film and you've, you know, taught film and stuff, you want something more profound and different that challenges you.
Right. Know? No. Yeah. I mean, I think in general, the formula for sequels is always an uphill battle because you have to do two counterintuitive things at once. It has to be new and familiar. It has to be different and the same. And how can something be different and the same?
Right.
Like, and that's the general problem that you have with any sequel or any series.
Yeah.
But before we close up, I mean, we could talk about Ghostbusters 2 for little hours.
And
but before we close up, there's a few things I want to mention. Going back to the courtroom scene, I always hated that Winston's not in the courtroom scene. Because you see him in the trial at the beginning when he's talking to them when they're on the bench. So that implies that Winston left, that he ran away with everyone else. And I refuse to believe that.
Yeah.
In my head canon, Winston was like, "Oh, I gotta go get my cigarettes from my car," and he like right. he like got in his car and like I don't know, he like got stuck inside. He was like, "Oh, I can't get out," and oh no, there's something going on, and I can't help him.
That actually would have been a fantastic joke if after they have their heroic moment and bust the ghost, he like walks in with his cigarettes.
Yes,
you know, he's like, "What I miss?" Like, that'd be funny.
Yeah. And I want to say that I'm genuinely still scared by when they're in the subway. Whole sequence of the subway with the like the heads on the spikes. That's genuine. But that's almost the most brilliant. Because see, when Ghostbusters is really funny, it's like Marx Brothers. It's like, how do you make different people figure together? How do they bounce off each other physically and verbally? And that sequence is both scary and funny. Like, it's scary, but then like they're like, "Where's Ray? Where's Ray?" And then he pops out of nowhere and scares them. And they're like, "Oh, okay." And then it's brilliant. Everything about that's brilliant. It scared the shit out of me as a kid. I think it's still very scary now.
Right.
And
It's this great sequence. You know, one thing that I don't think we ever really discussed that much on our shows, or at least on my shows, I don't discuss, is like the sound design. But like all the things that we've given praise to have amazing sound design. Star Wars has incredible sound design. Ghostbusters has incredible sound design.
Right.
And like, When that voice goes, "Winston," it's this amazing voice, and it feels like it fits into this Ghostbusters world.
Yeah,
you know, I love that whole sequence, and then the train shows up. It's just this set piece. There's no fucking train in the first movie. Like that sequence in the tunnel, you could say like, okay, well, it's similar to like maybe them being in the library in the first one or something, right?
But it's cool because it doesn't have Peter, because it's the other three.
Right. I was going to say, it's like not the exact same sequence. You know, it's something different.
Yeah. And like the library sequence, it's a combination of funny and scary.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think the reason why that sequence kind of always stands out, and I always remember that sequence too, is because other scenes are almost like mirror scenes to the first movie, beat for beat with the people in them, but this is a different one, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
What's cooler, a lightsaber or a proton pack?
I mean,
this is like just kids in a cafeteria conversation.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So just being from New York, and I think Ghostbusters is cooler, especially the first movie, than anything Star Wars, I would say a proton pack. But I'm also kind of lying to myself, because if I like walked out of my house and I had a fucking lightsaber on my belt, I think that'd be the coolest fucking thing ever. But I'm going to go with proton pack.
And you live in Texas where you can open carry a lightsaber.
Yes. Yeah.
In 2016, when actually for like a while after 2016, when the remake came out, Madame Tussauds in New York City had a Ghostbusters virtual reality experience. That was like you put on a proton pack and you put on these goggles, and it was one of those things where like it wasn't just virtual reality, like you were walking in space. Like at one point you're outside and like they have fans blowing, like so like the real world that you're like tactilely touch, like you're, the real world you're touching matches what you're seeing. And I have to say, and I went with a friend, I as if I had been training my whole life for it, I snapped right into it. My friend was like, at one point you go in an elevator and then you go down and it opens and there's like a scary hallway. And my friend was like scared and I was like, let's go.
Yeah.
She was like, man, I don't know. And I was like, you've got a fucking proton pack. You come on. This is the fucking job. And I swear to God, you have to go in fours. So it was me, my friend, and two other strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately took the fucking Peter roll. I was like telling the strangers what to do. I was like, you throw a trap, you fucking move it, blah, blah, blah. I started directing everything. And I was like, I have perfect training for a job that doesn't exist. Like, I was so thriving in that moment.
Yes.
In a way that I will never thrive in my real life.
Oh my God, I'm so jealous. Like, I think that if that had happened to me, that would be a moment that would rival the birth of my children. You know, just, oh my God, I wish we had something like that, you know. was it like stuff from the first movie, the second movie, or is it like the 2016 one?
The proton packs looked like the 2016 one, but it was mostly its own unique thing. Actually, it was more like the first movie because Stay Puft comes out.
Oh.
And like he rips the wall down. It's pretty wild.
It was, oh man.
I've done a lot of these virtual reality things, and it was the best virtual reality thing I've ever done.
It
was wild. It was wild.
Yeah.
All right. So before we end, can you rank the four Ghostbusters movies?
Okay. Okay. All right. This one, I don't want people to think I'm a misogynist. If we're talking about enjoyment, I would... God damn. Okay, fine. Afterlife, Ghostbusters 2016, Ghostbusters 2, and then Ghostbusters 1, which is like chronological order, right? So
each one gets a little worse for you.
Yeah. I like the 2016 one, but I don't like enjoy it a lot, and it also kind of hits those same story beats too. And then Afterlife, I just feel like, you know, I hate when the legacy sequels become, oh, we just have to do the whole movie by the very end, like we just have to do the same thing.
I hate that.
What about you?
You know, when I first saw Afterlife, I ranked it higher than Ghostbusters 2, and I still like Afterlife, but I'm not as high on it as I was. I actually think I might go worst to best. Fuck. I might go Afterlife Part 2, 2016, and then the original. I think 2016 is really good. And every time I watch it, I like it more. It's funny. It's inventive. I really like 2016 a lot. But again, this, like, you know, my whole life, though, I always heard, like, Ghostbusters 2, that sucks. And I never, even as, you know, like, I never got it. Like, and it's, I can look at it as an adult with adult eyes. You know what I mean? Like I could watch stuff as a kid and know that it's objectively not great. But I can't tell you that objectively Ghostbusters 2 is bad. I think it came out like a week before Batman. And like Indiana Jones Part 3. I think like it had so much crazy competition when it came out. I feel like everyone was like, who cares about Ghostbusters? Like, it's Batman fever.
Yeah. Yeah, that is... I was going to say that at the very beginning of the episode was that I remember going to see Batman in the theaters. Like, I specifically remember like being in the parking lot afterwards and stuff. Like, Batman, that was like a nuclear bomb going off in my brain seeing that. So I think that's why probably Ghostbusters 2 gets overlooked, you know, because Batman was such a big deal. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, everyone, happy New Year! I hope your 2024 is great. Peter, thank you so much for being here. Can you tell the folks where they can hear more of your insights?
Let's do this. Okay, so just come over to YouTube or Spotify and type in The LasserCast, and you'll see me and my friend Danny. Mike did a great description before. Right now we're covering the show Monarch, which is kind of cheesy. It's on Apple TV, but it's set in that MonsterVerse universe. But we're going to have our Best of 2023 episode soon, and I'm watching a whole bunch of horror movies to catch up with that. You could also come over to YouTube and Spotify and check out the comic books transformed, where me and Brian are talking about streaming shows and movies. We're going to do a review of Aquaman 2 pretty soon, and we're going to do Rebel Moon, the Zack Snyder thing. I know you can't wait for that, Mike.
I can't wait.
And then there's some new episodes of What If coming up on there. Guys, I'm on Twitch too, which you can watch all this shit on there too. And one thing I tried, Mike, this is pretty candid, but I some people, some writers actually write on Twitch where like they're streaming and they're writing.
Oh,
some
wow.
Of them you could see what they're writing as they write it. Others, they're doing it off screen and like you could just talk to them. But I'm just doing that now. I just started this week. It's just basically for me to consistently be able to write. No one was watching me at all, but I just was like, hey,
Harlan Ellison would write, like he had this thing where he was like, I can write anything. Give me an idea. I'll write you a story. And he would do it like in the Macy's window. He did that a few times.
Yep.
Really interesting.
Yes, yes. I actually know exactly what you're talking about. They would give him a challenge like every year.
Yeah.
And he would do it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, so if you guys want to come on Twitch, I'm PR Marsh on Twitch. And you can come interrupt me while I'm writing so I don't write anything too. So,
perfect.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks. I had a real pleasure talking about this. I could have gone another half hour more with you.
Me too, me too. All right, everybody. This is PCMC. We come out every Wednesday. We'll be back next week. Me and Peter are going to be talking about Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
Nice.
We end every episode by saying go bye-bye.
Go bye-bye.